Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. 2 weeks ago, Utah became the 19th and one of the most conservative states to ban licensed therapists from practicing so-called conversion therapy on children. The practice tries to alter the sexual preference or gender identities of LGBTQ people, but leading health organizations warn conversion therapy is both harmful and ineffective. We'll talk about what happened in Utah in the next segment, but first is a statewide conversion ban therapy ban on the horizon in Ohio. Joining us is Dr. Scott Leibowitz. He's a psychiatrist with Nationwide Children's Hospital and a leading authority on the mental health and well-being of LGBTQ youth. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
State Senator Tina Maharath, she is a Democrat from the Columbus suburb of Whitehall. She proposed legislation in April to ban conversion therapy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me this morning.
What inspired you to introduce the bill last year?
Well, actually, this is a practice that's not only in American culture, but also within our Southeast Asian culture. So I'm a child of refugees from parents from Laos, which is near Thailand and Cambodia. And oftentimes, they don't practice Christianity. I believe Laos is 90% Buddhist.
Uh-huh.
Of course, Thailand and Cambodia has their list of cultures as well. So growing up, one of my cousins had invoked that he was gay in front of my grandmother. And next thing you know, she's doing this spiritual practice of spitting on his face, trying to change his mind that he's not gay. And it traumatized me so much. And mind you, we were about 6 or 7 years old at that time that I'll never forget it until I came across this bill that was actually introduced last General Assembly from my old colleague, Senator Charlita Tavares.
Uh-huh.
And I felt inspired to reintroduce it, not only for the American cultures, but also for the new Americans as well coming into our state, let alone in our country, to know that this is a practice that should be banned. You cannot change your sexual identity or your gender preference, and you should not change it. So I wanted to go ahead and introduce it for common times through the 21st century.
I have seen that in other states, including Utah, the ban extends only to licensed therapists, not clergy or lay people, as long as they don't charge money for it. What does your bill do? Who's banned from providing so-called conversion therapy?
Well, I am also mimicking Utah, which is banning the dangerous practice for those who are licensed practices under the age of 18. Although it does not ban the clergy, and it also doesn't prohibit the counseling for providing this acceptance, support, and understanding of one person. But still, it's with clergy, it's something that people tend to go to in more rural parts of the state versus going to a licensed medical practice. So I felt that it was more important to make sure those who are receiving funding through the state, such as Medicaid, who are licensed medical practitioners, do not practice this type of conversion therapy ban.
And what's the status of the bill in Ohio now?
We received our sponsor testimony on September 18th of last year. So I did request the chair to receive more hearings, but again, it's up to the discretion of the chair.
One of the things in the other states has been that it's been bipartisan in Virginia. I noted at the top of the hour that it was a bipartisan. Well, I'm sorry, it was Republican, but both in the Senate and the House of Delegates in Virginia. What kind of feedback are you getting from your Republican colleagues?
I have received nothing. I'm hopeful for the bipartisan support as well. However, so far I've received a lot of feedback from the Democratic caucus of support of this piece of legislation.
Uh-huh.
But we'll have to see what happens if it receives more hearing. But I think the biggest thing is this causes another regulation towards licensed healthcare professionals. And with the Republican caucus, they tend to stay away from any type of regulation.
Mm.
But this is something important.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the issue of conversion therapy today. As I mentioned earlier, it's a practice that tries to alter the sexual preference or gender identities of LGBTQ people. Leading health organizations, practically everyone you can think of, has warned that conversion therapy is both harmful and ineffective. Dr. Scott Leibowitz is also with us. He's a psychiatrist at Nationwide Children's Hospital. He's a leading authority on the mental health and well-being of LGBTQ youth. Dr. Leibowitz, What about having another regulation?
So I actually don't think of this as a regulation, and more I think about it as a protection. In fact, in the medical community, we think more about this instead of terming it as conversion therapy. We think about these as change efforts instead.
Uh-huh.
Using the word therapy itself legitimizes this as a therapy when, in fact, it's not. And every major medical association serving minors and even adults have come out with policy statements that are against these types of efforts.
Have you treated children who have been exposed to this so-called therapy? And again, I use that as because it's a familiar term, but I completely get your point about it's a bogus term as well.
Right. Well, I haven't treated people who have been through it because minors that are coming to Nationwide Children's Hospital are typically brought here by parents who are seeking evidence-based care, and they know that they will get the care that is the most up-to-date and gold standard and will promote health and well-being. We do have families that ask us to do efforts such as this who are uneducated perhaps or don't know that what they're asking actually amounts to that, and a lot of education has to take place with those families. And ultimately, when we can get the families to a place of understanding, they realize that efforts to try and change someone's sexual orientation or gender identity is simply like making a left-handed person a right-handed person without considering the harms along the way.
I read somewhere that at least 350 to 400,000 Americans have been subjected to this kind of treatment. What do you know about how widespread the practice is?
I think that the practice was more overt back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s
uh-huh.
when there were aversion techniques, you know, using even electroshock therapies and nausea-stimulating techniques or even trying to force stereotypical gender roles onto people. Now, it's much harder to define, considering 19 states have protections against minors from this. And most of those protections exist among licensed professionals, as you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to say that even if a practitioner is not necessarily advertising that they are doing something such as conversion therapy, even a simple facial expression of disdain when a youth comes in and says, "This is how I'm feeling," could be considered along the lines of what conversion therapy is. So it's much more difficult to quantify the amount of people that are actually doing it.
Senator Maharath, the Utah law, we call it a law. It actually was an executive rule change. Am I correct?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten a chance to double-check all 19 states, but yes, I believe it is.
Yeah, they're looking at law changes, but it's a rule change. And we're going to get, by the way, listeners, we're going to get into that more detail coming up later in the hour with a reporter from Utah. But one of the things they do is that even if you're a clergy or a lay counselor, you're not allowed to take money for whatever you're doing, right?
Right.
Is your proposed legislation doing that as well?
It is not, but it's most certainly something that I would like to consider. It's only because for right now, sending a message, if this bill was to pass, would send a clear message throughout Ohio that attempts to change one's personal sexual orientation and gender identity, it's not based on science, and it's harmful to the individual. That's the message I want to send out. And what the licensed healthcare professionals, this is something that they shouldn't be invoking in the first place, because this type of practice invokes guilt and anxiety, and that's something that we're trying to treat for Ohio children currently. But it's something I can most certainly consider.
And Dr. Leibowitz, what are the harms? What is the damage done?
Harms really range anywhere from depression to anxiety to even leading to youth who are thrown out when they try to rebuke these practices. But at worst and most concerning would be suicidal ideation and suicide attempt. And there is clear-cut research that's been done by very reputable organizations and published in highly reputable journals that show that youth who are LGBT and subjected to efforts to change their sexual orientation by parents and also therapists are experiencing suicide attempts at a 63%, which is triple the amount of suicide attempts in LGBT youth who do not get subjected to such practice.
Which is bad enough. I mean, triple what is already a horrible statistic.
Correct. Family acceptance is a crucial factor in promoting the positive well-being of LGBTQ youth. However, promoting conversion therapy or these types of interventions or efforts certainly makes that risk much higher. So this is a health issue for everybody, and bipartisanship is important. I know I'm not a politician, but I would like to say that in those 19 states, 8 of those bills have been signed by Republican governors. So I think that we're moving in a direction where people across both sides of the aisle appreciate the impact that harming our children has on the overall society and as a whole.
And you know, we're talking about how widespread this is. This the proposed ban that Senator Maharath has introduced in the Ohio Senate would address licensed therapists right now. How widespread is it among licensed therapists to do that? Do you even know anybody who practices this kind of therapy, Dr. Leibowitz?
Well, I think that people who do this type of intervention probably don't want to know me. And, you know, of course, we have to make outreach to these types of individuals. I personally actually do not know of anyone that's advertising themselves to do this. I think that people are afraid to say that this is something they are doing and go more underground.
Yes.
And largely because it's something that's very well known amongst pediatricians, child and adolescent psychiatrists, psychologists, as something extremely harmful. I mean, we're talking about at least organizations representing hundreds of thousands of providers across the United States that are clearly stating the harms of this. So any provider that's doing this is typically probably not advertising such a service. And quite frankly, I think that if they're saying to a family that they can change their kid's sexual orientation or gender identity, that constitutes fraud in my book, because they're not necessarily able to prove that this intervention can work.
And there's no training to do this in any reputable or otherwise place of education.
No evidence-based training.
No evidence-based
training in residency programs that are accredited. So if you are a licensed professional, you certainly did not learn how to do this from your licensed, the organization that is licensing you.
Of course, as you mentioned, this was more prevalent. It goes back as long as we, you know, humans go back as far as trying to change people in this regard. But it was sort of condoned as a mental illness for decades. And that changed in the 70s, right?
Well, we're dating back to times before psychiatry even has its own classifications of what constitutes mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, in 1973, for example, homosexuality was removed from the DSM as a mental health disorder. And in fact, we don't even consider gender diversity or being transgender as a mental health issue as well. In fact, recently in the most updated version of the DSM-5, which is our manual for psychiatric illness, gender dysphoria, which is really the distress that arises as a result of one's gender identity and sex anatomy differing, that can bring on its own challenges. And therefore, people who liken treatment of gender dysphoria or helping trans people with gender affirmative care, people who liken that to efforts of this are using this in a very twisted and backwards way. They do not constitute these change efforts as we know them.
Senator Maharath, before I let you go, what's your next step with this? I mean, if they don't act soon, you know how things work. It probably won't get done before the end of the year and the end of the session. What's next?
I will most certainly push the chair to get another hearing and, of course, do more advocacy work within our communities to get this out and get this put in the surface. Because I understand that most parents, they want to do the right thing for their child. But when their child comes out as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, it's going to be difficult for them to know what might be best for them if we don't send this type of message to parents that conversion therapy is discredited. and it's a practice that's no longer welcomed here in Ohio. So I would ideally like to get this out to our state to know that we can't allow another person here in our state be targeted by these dangerous and discredited practices. And we need this legislation to educate parents and our youth and to protect those who are harmed by these unethical mental health professionals. Because even the Ohio Counselor, Social Worker, and Marriage and Family Therapist boards made it clear that practicing conversely is a violation of the code of ethics.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're saying so, then we should follow so in terms of legislation. And I just want to make that message clear for our state that this is not welcomed and we should follow along the lines of the medical field. We have a doctor on the line today who's mimicking literally everything that I have been saying throughout mm-hmm. this course of the testimony, that we should be discouraging this perception of homosexuality as a physiological disorder, and we should prevent the treatment that's very ineffective and it provides harmful treatment to our minors. It's going to cause more suicides, et cetera.
Senator Maharath, what committee is it in?
It is currently in the Health, Human Services, and Medicaid Committee.
In the Senate. Think in the Ohio Senate. Senator Tina Maharath, State Senator for Ohio's 3rd District, around Whitehall, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Anne. I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You too. Dr. Scott Leibowitz, psychiatrist at Nationwide Children's Hospital, thanks for your time as well. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for illustrating this very important topic. I appreciate it. Thank you.
We will continue our conversation. We're going to hear from a reporter from Utah about what happened there and how they changed the law in Utah. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Utah just became the 19th state to adopt a ban on gay conversion therapy for minors. It's a discredited practice. Doctors don't like us to refer to it as therapy, actually. Medical institutions have called it ineffective and potentially harmful. Since then, the Virginia House of Delegates approved a similar measure. Republicans in the Kentucky House and Senate have also put forward anti-conversion therapy legislation. Bans are on the books in 7 Ohio cities, including Columbus. Troy Stevenson is the campaign manager of 50 Bills, 50 States at the Trevor Project, a nonprofit organization focused on suicide prevention efforts among lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning youth. Welcome to the show, Troy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
What does the who's Trevor?
The Trevor Project. We are the world's largest LGBTQ youth suicide prevention organization. So we've been around for 20 years and serve hundreds of thousands of youth around the United States and some even as far as Canada.
So the 50 Bills, 50 States initiative, that's to get similar legislation is on the books or they're working on in Kentucky and Virginia enacted?
Exactly. We work to make sure that youth are protected in all 50 states from this discredited and debunked practice.
I want to welcome to the show now Nicole Nixon. She's a reporter with KUER Radio in Utah. Welcome to the show, Nicole.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You've been covering the story there. The ban there wasn't legislation per se. It was a rule change, right?
Yes. It's kind of a long story, but I can get into it a little bit. This started a year ago in Utah. The LGBT advocacy group here, Equality Utah, had asked two Mormon male Republican lawmakers to run this bill that would ban conversion therapy for minors. It's important to point out that Utah is heavily influenced by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Mm-hmm. About 90% of the state legislature here is Mormon. And this bill was celebrated at first. It ended up being gutted in the committee and abandoned. A few months later, the governor here announced that he wanted to pursue it and sort of enacted and directed it to be passed in the executive branch, sort of as a rule, a licensing rule through the Division of Professional Licensing for Therapists. So when it didn't work out legislatively, they came through the executive side and pursued it that way.
Troy Stevenson, is this a strategy in other states that is worthwhile following, or do you have problems with it?
Well, first, we have no problem with them. Utah did amazing work making sure that young people were protected. And Equality Utah that she just mentioned mm-hmm. is a phenomenal organization. But we've approached it from a regulatory angle in a few states. There are obviously each state has a different set of laws and procedures. So we take whatever method we can to get the most youth protected. So most states, that's a legislative answer, but we've looked at both angles. In Virginia, for example, we're working with regulatory bodies as well as the state legislature. So it's not an either or. Sometimes it's an all of the above.
Like other states, Nicole Nixon, the Utah rule change does not cover clergy and just lay people who say they can do this as long as they don't take money for it, right?
Right. So, again, this gets to the influence of the Mormon church here in Utah.
Okay.
And that was an issue from the beginning. The church is involved in a lot of legislation here, and they had concerns at first that there weren't enough protections for parents or for clergy. You know, in their own homes when they're off the clock, if they may be therapists.
Mm-hmm.
Utah's passed a few protections for LGBTQ people in recent years, like housing non-discrimination, but it's always worked out, or it has been worked out with the LDS Church to have this sort of balance of protecting LGBT people and providing for a little, you know, wiggle room for religious groups as well.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the debunked practice of so-called conversion therapy. It's supposed to change a person's it's intended to alter a person's sexual preference or gender identity, but leading health organizations, you name it, the health organization has warned that this so-called therapy is both harmful and ineffective. We're talking right now with Nicole Nixon. She's a reporter with KUER Radio in Salt Lake City, Utah. Also with us, Troy Stevenson, campaign manager for 50 Bills, 50 States at the Trevor Project. So, Nicole Nixon, just to make it really clear from what I understood from my reading, this is a church issue because they don't want to see erosion into church rights. It's not the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints officially opposes this kind of practice, right?
Yes, and they also have some, you know, they have family therapists and social services as well that the church runs, and they've been very clear from the beginning that they do not practice conversion therapy, do not condone it. But the issue here for them is giving parents and religious leaders the freedom and the right to have their own personal held belief, you know, in the home and in the church.
Troy Stevenson, what have you found? What do we know about the incidence of this kind of practice? Again, I'm trying to avoid the use of word therapy, this kind of practice across the country?
The Trevor Project last year did a national survey where we surveyed 34,000 LGBTQ youth from around the country. And it depends on where you draw the line and what you call conversion therapy. The very formal going into a therapist's office or a licensed person's office, that's where we draw the baseline. But In the research, it was 2/3 of LGBT youth said there had been some sort of attempt to change their sexual orientation or gender identity. When we dove deeper into that data, 5% actually said they'd been through some sort of formal attempt by a licensed practitioner or a faith leader to change their sexual orientation. So it's very prevalent. I mean, if you take 5% of the population as a baseline, mm-hmm. so we know it's a lot higher than that. That's a lot of young people.
And what are they reporting? What's the most common experience? Is there a way to summarize that for listeners who aren't necessarily familiar with what actually goes on?
Well, and that's an interesting question, and it's a very important question. This is not a medical practice. There's nobody that teaches how to do this because it's debunked pseudoscience. So I'm sorry, there was a phone going off somewhere. That makes it difficult to track how that's happening because we don't know. There's no set guidelines for this basically abusive structure. So no, we don't know exactly what they're doing. We know that most of it is a version of talk therapy, which is just as abusive as the physical aspects, though.
When I was talking with a physician, a psychiatrist from Nationwide Children's Hospital here in Columbus, he said that even kind of, and I don't mean to sound flippant about this, but even getting someone kind of the stink eye when they come out to, you know, if their parents give them a weird look or the pastor gives them a weird look, that is a form of conversion that can be damaging.
I mean, all of these things can be damaging. Uh-huh. That is not the baseline where we draw it. But
okay.
We do quite often say that an attempt to change somebody's sexual orientation or gender identity can be anything from grandma asking them if they've met a nice boy yet or a nice girl yet mm-hmm. to these formal attempts. So these are all attempts to change somebody's orientation. But we really – what we are trying to stop is the formalized practice of doing this by licensed therapists across the country, because that's the most traumatic, is when you've got somebody that's supposed to be a doctor or a medical professional telling you that there's something intrinsically wrong with the person when they know there's not, and there's no scientific basis for what they're doing. That makes sense.
Nicole Nixon, I read that there's some who are not happy with this rule change in Utah. Is this deal the final word? Is it amendable? Has anyone said they challenge the ban?
I haven't heard of any attempts to try to challenge it. There were people that opposed it. Like I mentioned, these conservative lawmakers gutted the bill at the beginning and sort of ruined that attempt at the beginning. But the conservative groups do oppose it. I don't know if there will be. I haven't seen anything in our legislative session this year to roll it back or even codify it. They have both of those options. The legislature does. But even if there was an attempt to roll it back, our Republican governor here has been very supportive of it. Directed that rule change in the first place, and I don't believe he would be supportive of rolling this back any further.
And Troy Stevenson, in your analysis, what are some of the toughest states that you're looking at going forward with this?
I mean, honestly, every state right now is difficult. And we have opportunities. So we would have assumed that some of the quote-unquote red states would be more difficult, but we've actually got a committee hearing in Oklahoma next week where there's been a lot of positive news. So, I mean, there are obviously places without as strong of an advocacy group as Equality Utah. There are places that just don't have that. So those are really the more difficult places where we have to mobilize a little bit differently to get lawmakers to see that this is a needed change.
I was wondering if maybe in some of those states that you would assume would have been more difficult, that the practice is more common and people are more familiar with the fallout from it.
That's entirely possible. Yeah, especially when there are very public situations where youth are harmed or where they're telling their story, it becomes much more of a impetus for lawmakers to create that change.
And Nicole Nixon, has there been a story in Utah that's inspired people to back this?
Yeah, I think that's why it was very successful from the beginning, is you had people, I'm thinking of this young man that I interviewed, for the story is named Nathan Daly. From the beginning, he, you know, when they held a press conference announcing this legislation last year, he got up and talked about how he had gone through conversion therapy, the sort of emotional and physical abuse that he endured through that, and how he had, began having suicidal thoughts during and even attempted suicide. And he watched that documentary, Boy Erased, that film that was out a year or two ago, and realized that actually what he was going through was conversion therapy. He didn't realize it at the time. So he became sort of this symbol and this vocal opponent against it, and became the face of it. And really sort of, I think that that is what helps for issues like this, to see somebody who went through it and was affected by it, and how they were affected by it.
Troy Stevenson, has things like that film Boy Erased helped raise awareness about the problem?
Absolutely. The Trevor Project was actually deeply involved in Boy Erased and rolling it out. And it is, especially, we just yesterday got a request from lawmakers in Kentucky to send copies of the DVD, to ask the producers to send copies of the DVD to Republican lawmakers because they wanted to watch it. I think it's a very powerful narrative that that we tell quite often. And like Nicole was saying, we've got survivors speaking out across the country about this who have been through, they're suffering from PTSD and other traumatic illnesses, but because of the conversion therapy. But we also remind people that there are folks that were truly victims of this that didn't survive. If you look at rates of suicidality amongst folks, it's really high. And it's those stories, the stories of the survivors and those that didn't survive, that make such an impact on lawmakers when they see the real harm done by this.
Yeah,
I will say that. Yeah, here in Utah, they very much tied it to suicide rates and made that sort of the issue. We know that, you know, LGBT children are already more likely than their heterosexual peers to attempt suicide, and
right.
Then on top of that, you have studies showing that suicide rate for LGBT people doubles or even triples when you have parents or therapists or religious leaders attempting to change that adolescent sexual orientation. So preventing youth suicide was a big part of the argument for passing this ban.
Nicole Nixon, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Nicole Nixon is a reporter with KUEI Radio in Utah. Also, Troy Stevenson, campaign manager for 50 bills, 50 states at the Trevor Project. You're going to stay with us. Thanks for your time as well.
Well, thank you.
We will continue our conversation. We're going to hear from the Kaleidoscope Youth Center here in Columbus about the issue. So if you have a question or comment, if you have some insights about this therapy, one way or the other, and want to share them, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. We're talking about what's called conversion therapy. It's a discredited and considered a harmful practice that aims to change sexual orientation from gay to straight, or sexual identity from one thing to another. 19 states, most recently Utah, have moved in recent years to protect minors from conversion therapy. 7 Ohio cities, including Columbus, have ordinances curtailing the practice, and a statewide ban was introduced as a measure in the Ohio Senate last spring. Still with us is Troy Stevenson, campaign manager, 50 bills, 50 states at the Trevor Project. Thanks again, Troy, for staying with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Joining us is Liam Gallagher. He's program manager at the Kaleidoscope Youth Center in Columbus. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
What are you seeing at the Kaleidoscope Youth Center in terms of this issue? I mean, are people talking about it?
Honestly, as far as youth go, yeah, I'm not hearing it either.
Okay, we're gonna get somebody in here and fix that mic. In the meantime, Troy Stevenson. We talked about Boy Erased, and there's also the miseducation of Cameron Post. They showed gay characters being forced to undergo conversion therapy. How did those films, show what the experience is? What is your sense about those?
I mean, I think that you've always got a dramatic license when it comes to these things, but it's very... These films were very almost true to form. I mean, a lot more of it is talk therapy than was showed, or folks talking at people, basically. But there is still a very large aspect of the physical and aversion abuse that goes on. So they did a lot to highlight it. And what was unique about these films, especially Boy Erased, is it was written by a survivor of conversion therapy. So it was a firsthand account. And I believe the Miseducation of Cameron Post was as well, but I'm not as familiar with that piece.
And then for young people who are struggling with issues of sexual identity, I mean, a lot of kids come into this not clear about it themselves necessarily, right?
Absolutely. And the best practices of every major medical and psychological association in the country say that affirming therapy should be what is used there. It's not to shame somebody about who they are. It's to help them come to grips with who they are one way or the other, but not to push them in either direction. So there's nothing within the medical or psychological practices says that you should push the sexual orientation or gender identity of anyone in any direction. They should come to their own truth. And that's what folks try to get across here. I mean, if somebody was actually trying to change someone's sexual orientation to gay, that would be an uproar, justifiably. It's just follow uproar about somebody trying to change an intrinsic trait about a young person, if that makes sense.
And Liam Gallagher, try again, project manager at Kaleidoscope Youth Center. What are you finding? I mean, do the kids that you work with talk about this?
Yeah, thanks again for having me. You know, I think one thing that we are really fortunate at Kaleidoscope is that the youth who come here already typically have some kind of support in their lives, whether it's family support, who are driving them, dropping them off to our youth center, or if it's maybe friends, someone, a teacher in their life, an adult who they can trust. But we find that family support is so key. And we have a lot of really open conversations where a lot of our youth actually kind of have this myth that it's outdated and that it's not happening because they are at a place that is so
gotcha.
Supportive, which is wonderful. I'm excited for the day that folks, you know, are talking about this as if it has completely stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So they are aware that this is something that is still happening. A lot of them are really frustrated that this isn't something everyone universally sees as something that should be allowed youth to be authentic and live their own lives.
I thought that Senator Maharath, who has the bill pending in the Ohio Senate right now to ban this this kind of practice by licensed therapists in Ohio, she made the interesting point that in her case, it had much more to do with ethnicity and country of origin, that it's not just a Christian thing, that they weren't Christians, that it has to do with cultural problems. And I'm wondering if you're seeing, that kind of manifestation of questioning.
You know, I think that does sometimes play a factor. We talk a lot about intersectionality at Kaleidoscope because youth are coming in with, you know, not one identity, but multiple identities.
Yeah.
And so when we're looking at kind of immigrant communities particularly, sometimes I do think there is maybe just like a difference in understanding or acceptance from, you know, where you were coming from. I know that there have been studies that have shown that, like, if for folks who are from the United States, family support tends to be a little bit higher than folks who are immigrants here in the United States. However, I think that's also sometimes, you know, a misconception. There are plenty of immigrant families that are really, really supportive as well. And sometimes it has to do with having that supportive religious community. And we're finding a lot more churches that are being open and affirming of LGBTQ youth and identities. And I really recommend folks who have that strong religious conviction to seek out those affirming communities, because that is something that exists and is thriving as well.
Trey Stevenson, have you observed maybe some complacency because it's not in the forefront? People think that it's people aren't doing that anymore. Why the worry about it?
When I first started working on this issue in 2012, there was very much a misconception that this was a thing of the past, something of the 1970s or 1980s. But I think the public education that's been done around highlighting the stories of survivors and victims and the families of those that didn't survive has done a lot to show that this is still happening. And we have identified practitioners from across the country, lots of practitioners from across the country, and been able to very clearly demonstrate that it is happening. I think that while that was a major, and it still is in some places, people, especially in more quote-unquote liberal places, they don't believe it's happening in their communities, and quite often that's exactly where it's happening. Mm. Folks might be coming from other parts of a region, but they're usually based in cities or surrounding cities. So I think that they're right, that this is, folks no longer don't believe it's happening, but they don't necessarily believe it's happening where they're at, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's just like everybody votes for their own congressman. It can't be theirs, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, how do you educate people about that, Trey Stevenson? Like you mentioned that they're asking for the movie Boy Erased in Kentucky, where they're considering a measure. And I'm also wondering if you're concerned about the practice going underground, like this, it might push
Absolutely.
Things underground.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what happens. So when I said we identify practitioners around the country, we don't make those names public.
Okay.
We sometimes talk to lawmakers about them and show them, but we don't give them to the media, because what we end up doing is creating situations where they do go underground. There was a lawsuit by the Southern Poverty Law Center against an organization called Jonah in New Jersey. It's Jews Offering Alternatives for Healing, what they called themselves. Southern Poverty Law Center won that lawsuit and forced Jonah to go underground because they were charging money and it was deemed to be consumer fraud. Well, what happened was they complied, they went away, and they went underground, and they came back with a new name and had to have another lawsuit to intervene by Southern Poverty. So yes, it's very much the fear that once one of these practitioners gets outed, for lack of a better word, they go underground, they start doing it again. Sometimes when we pass bans in municipalities, they'll move to the outskirts of that municipality, to the next county over, the next city over, and put their shingle back up and start again. So this is why it's so important to get statewide protections for youth because we know that it just goes underground and comes back if we don't.
And what arguments do practitioners give? It's been so widely debunked now. What are they leaning on at this point? Just myth and old stories?
Right. It's usually anecdotal old stories of or a belief in a religious belief, and we respect everybody's faith, but that right to do something to a young person ends when you start hurting that young person. So it comes from a lot of times a faith-based perspective, a lot of times a place of bias. When you're talking about more secular people, that they just don't like queer folk and they think that they should be able to change them no matter what the science says. So we live in an age where anti-intellectualism and anti-science abounds, and that's what we're finding here.
Yeah. Liam Gallagher?
Yeah, I think one other big thing for me is that there's, even if there isn't a religious component, sometimes even medically, there's still this, you know, myth or bias out there that being in the LGBT community is a mental illness and it's something that needs to be fixed, quote unquote. And we know that that's not true. This is, you know, an identity that is core to people. And it's not a mental illness that can be, you know, fixed with some kind of pill or anything like that or therapy. Folks who are undergoing conversion therapy, or sometimes what it can look like even community-based, is that stigmatization and being isolated from your community. So if you are core to a religious community, or just folks who have a religious affiliation, sometimes that can be that stigma is still within those communities. I think a lot of that is just a misunderstanding of the LGBT community, which is why it's so important for folks to get, you know, LGBT 101. Those kind of just really 101 information about the community can be so important to bridging the gap and finding common ground.
Let's see. Rich in Pataskala, you're on the air. Hi, Rich.
Hi. Good morning. It occurs to me that most of the people who would be put into a conversion thing like this, or at least a lot of them, are children who have no say.
Right.
If they can be put into one. So I didn't know if there's any outreach where you're maybe reaching out to kids saying, hey, if this ever happens to you, these are some survival kids who are put into this situation. How do you cope with it? How do you get through it? That's my question.
Yeah. Did you have something else, Rich?
No.
Okay, great. Yeah. Troy Stevenson, I mean, I know that you focus on legislation, but is there a reach outreach on this issue to educate just regular people?
Absolutely. There's public education efforts that go on through actually our advocacy department. But there's also, more directly to answer the question, the Trevor Project has a 24-hour live talk, text, and chat service. So we started as a crisis intervention organization. That's our primary focus, is making sure that youth and we're youth facing, so under 25, anybody that's facing any time of suicidality or depression or anything based on their sexual orientation or gender identity, we're available 24 hours. We have live operators, we have live counselors and therapists on hand, and we do this through the telephones, through text messages, SMS, and through chat on our Trevor Space app. So the resources are out there when young people do, and we try to make that as readily available and create public knowledge around that service as possible.
Yeah, and we'll post links to the Trevor Project and Kaleidoscope Youth Center on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. What about you at Kaleidoscope, Liam Gallagher? Any outreach?
Yeah, absolutely. So at Kaleidoscope, we serve youth ages 12 to 20. And primarily because we are an actual building here in Columbus, we're really only reaching folks who are in Columbus and a pretty small radius. We do have some individuals who drive upwards of an hour, hour and a half every week so that they can have this kind of community support, because there is such an isolation in more rural communities. And we know that that's one of the biggest things, is we're concerned about the folks that we don't see every day, that we aren't reaching. And we know that having any kind of support is so key. And if you don't have that family support or support with your friends or at school, then oftentimes we do suggest folks, you know, we think going to Trevor Space is one of the most important places you can be. You can find folks online that have your identity, that have been through similar things. And you have people who are really trained to deal with when you're in that crisis moment, to talk to you about, you know, what this community really has to offer as well, and that shame and the embarrassment that you've been feeling from, you know, this societal pressure, you don't have to feel that way.
Liam Gallagher, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your time as always.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Liam Gallagher, project manager at Kaleidoscope Youth Center here in Columbus, and Troy Stevenson, campaign manager for 50 Bills, 50 States at the Trevor Project. Thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
And thanks to everybody else for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.